Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Wednesday afternoon. Now that I finished my therapy session and PT, and let me take a look at the parsha. Especially, we can't help but look at in light of current events. The war is still going on. And you got Noach and Lech, for goodness sakes. Story of Noach and Abraham. This is being sponsored. Tonight is for the yard site tonight of Jake Shuchman of blessed memory by Eitan, Ariel, and family. And those of you who know I'm talking about know what an unusually fine person he was. And I think it's 3 years now. It's hard to believe. He passed away the night he was supposed to come and be one of the videographers, whatever. The lecture I was doing on Motzi Shabbos. It's like yesterday it happened. Anyway, the Neshama Shabbat Aliyah, that's an understatement. And we pay tribute to his memory. Now let's take a look at the wild and crazy stories, the roller coaster stories of Avraham Avinu in this week's Parsha, all of which is very confusing depending on which traditions you follow in terms of the chronology. The story, Lech Lecha is just interesting because Lech Lecha means Lech Lech. I know people think it's Lech Lecha, you know, Bishvil Chol Hanoscha. I know that vart that Rashi quotes. That's a midrash. But Lech Lecha is Ivrit, is dictic for Lech Lech. But since at the end of a sentence is Lech Lecha, you know. So it means God had to say, go, go. Why didn't God just say, go? Obviously, Avram is not so, it's not so easy to get him to go, Me'artzcha, and Melanchcha, and Beis Avicha. It was hard for him to uproot himself from his environment. That's clear. Question is, what's Tutzach here exactly? According to Chazal, and I mentioned in the past, and it's very confusing, Avram had two trips. And it's kind of weird, according to the Seder Olam, which is the Tanaitic chronology. And things are mamash ein mokdem mocha b'Torah. And what it means is that Avram was from a place called Ur Kasdim. But the Chazal are always talking about it being like the fire of the Chaldeans. That's where you get the idea that he was pulled out of a fiery furnace. It doesn't say in the Chumash, you know. Ur Kasdim was a city. It was dug up. We know where Ur of the Chaldees is, you know. It's an archaeological site. And it was a big city. And Avraham Avinu was what we would call today a successful businessman. You know, to own a buck or whatever the business was at that time, sheep and cattle and so forth. And keep that in mind. That was the founder of the Jewish religion. Was not the type of person you usually find in religions who are founders who are, you know, barefoot idealists or something like that. He was Isha Sakim. He was a upper middle class, something like that, maybe more successful business guy. That's why later on when Avram went around trying to convert people to monotheism, they didn't just blow him off. They said, listen, you know, the guy obviously has money. He's a person of this world. He's got 2 feet on the ground, as we would say today. He knows how to pay bills and make a living and all the rest of it. If he's telling me there's an invisible God out there, maybe it's true. If he was just, like I say, some barefoot hermit with long hair running around, you know, I say, fine, I see those guys every day. But if he clearly, like I say before, knows what's what and the difference between the real and the not real, and as I said, you can't survive in a world of business without having a sense of reality, and he nevertheless insists that all the idols are a bunch of baloney and there's one God who created the whole world, et cetera, et cetera, maybe I'll give him a hearing, right? And of course, when Avram piled on the free food, that was the end of that. Now, that usually worked. But Hashem chose somebody who was, like I say, in business. That's just interesting. Now, Avram came from Ur Kasdim. Somehow he ended up in Haran. It's not 100% clear. Ur Kasdim and Haran, if you look on the map, are not that close, but not that far from each other either. They're both in Mesopotamia, the Tigris-Euphrates rivers. I think they're both in the Tigris, if I remember correctly. And, you know, I'm sure Avram had been there before. In other words, you do business by going up and down the river, you see? Like in the old America, people go from St. Louis to New Orleans or something like that. It's not close, but it's not so far either, okay? Mashenkin, when you go to Canaan, you're abandoning the river system. You're crossing across the Syrian desert and into the area of the coastline in Lebanon and or wherever it is he came down from. Seems like he came down the Jordan Valley and came to Shechem. And then it's a different story. It's not a million miles away, but it's a different story. But Haran and Merkazim are sort of connected. Now, the story is, as far as we can patch it together, that Avraham made two trips to Israel. The when you see Lechel, that's the second trip. I always use, I'm sure I used it in the past, the best way of saying this in English is if you get the RECAP on the Handbook of Jewish Thought, and he kind of puts it all together, although he has a spin on it, there's no question about it. If you have to look always at his footnotes, and you have to look up his footnotes with a jaundiced eye. Nevertheless, having said that, fundamentally he's correct, although there's a groan and all the rest of it. And he basically says that at the age of 70, Abraham took a voluntary pilgrimage to the Holy Land. After a sojourn in Egypt where he gained great wealth, he returned to the Holy Land where he came up, caught up in a great battle that was raging there. After playing a decisive role in the battle, he was blessed by Shem and taught him the traditions which had been handed down from the time of Adam. And at that time, Abraham took over from Shem the task of being the bearer of these traditions. That is a little bit, a tiny bit misleading, but it's fundamentally correct. Because the traditions he's talking about is not Kabbalistic, but it's the Soto Eber. If you look up the original source in the Pirkei Blezer in chapter 8, okay? But that doesn't matter. Fundamentally, this is correct. Now, I'll tell you what I mean in a second. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a guy named Avram, who originally Zohar Kazdim, but not anymore, who moved from there somewhere else. It's not 100% clear where he moved, and I'm serious about this. But, you know, somewhere over there in Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia means the land between the two rivers. Iraq, as we call it today. We are all Iraqis or Kuwaitis, if you want to go down like that. And he went to Eretz Yisrael. As people do when you are thinking of moving there. Very few people just go sight unseen and say, I'm moving to Israel. Stamas are just like that. My sister did it when she got married, but she's an unusual person. Most people, especially Americans, they say like this, let me go, let me check out the real estate scene, let me see where I would like to live, what I can do about getting a mortgage, you know, and so on and so forth. They have Nefesh, Benefesh, all these other organizations, precisely to facilitate this kind of process. Obviously, those refugees who ran away, you know, from Hitler and whatever, and the Sephardim and the who fled to Israel, I mean, they didn't have that kind of luxury. They showed up and they were pretty glad that they came to a safe place. But a lot of people do what I just said. Check it out. Now, you got to be wealthy to do that because you're disrupting your whole life and, you know, moving far away. Avram obviously was into the bucks, and he moved to Eretz Yisrael for a visit. There he faces a bunch of difficult times. That's what we have in our Parsha. And it reminds us, in light of current events, that Eretz Yisrael is nicknamed the Yisurin. Moving to Eretz Yisrael, if you want to have a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael, it does involve pain and discomfort. Not necessarily the pain that we all experienced 2 weeks ago with the crazy Hamas stuff, Chas v'Chalila, but that's happened in the past also, if you know your history. And I'll say it again, they're all kind of hardships, and sort of like Mice and Sutton trying to mess you up. And so Avram comes, as I said before, a well-to-do guy. As best as I can tell, me, myself, and I, when he comes, isn't loaded with a lot of, he doesn't come with a lot of property. I'll tell you why I say that. To cut to the chase, yeah, I'll read you a footnote in our recap and listen to this. According to most sources, when Avram came the first time, he was 70 years old, before God told him to leave at the age of 75. Because Avram ben Chamesh b'Shiv Mishana, you know, that's the second time he went. And check out the Seder Olam and the Mechilta and the Ramban and Mizrahi and da-da-da, this and that and the other. According to this, the account in Genesis 10, 15, 10:15 to 21 occurred when Avram was 70 years old. Since this is an uninterrupted account, his second call when he was 75 is Genesis 12 to 1 to 9. So what that means in English is that when you start Parshas Lech Lecha in the very beginning, which is Perek Yud Beis, I'll use the Geisha, Perek Yud Beis, the first part until Haloch V'Nasoh HaNegba. So that's the second journey. And when it says afterwards in Pasuk Yud, Vayira Ba'aretz and all the rest of it, that's the first journey. And it's mamash out of order. So when he comes the second time, it says that he came with a lot of property. Vayikach, this is the second journey in Pasuk Hey at the beginning. Vayikach Avram Sarah Yishta Lo Ben Achiv Rechusha Masha Rochash Hanhem Masha Shalse Becharan Vayitzel Lechaz Arkis Ham Vayivar Tzikhan. But that doesn't mean, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, that when he came the first time, he came with all this stuff, and he certainly didn't come with Nefesh HaShe'asa B'charon, because that's what he made afterwards. You understand? When did he do Nefesh HaShe'asa B'charon? After he made his trip to Israel, at least that's my argument today, and after his encounter with Shem, as you'll see in a second. So this guy named Avram comes with his wife. I don't know if he comes with others. It doesn't say, as far as I can see over here, it doesn't say anything about Lot. Now, I know there's a chazal that says that Lot was the god of mitzvah because he was quiet about Sarah, blah, blah, blah. I know that. But if you do the calculation, what I just said, which in the Seder Olam, and you read the Pesukim closely, you'll see that when you get to Pasuk Yud and they talk about the famine, the Rav Arts, ain't no Lot there. Okay? Ain't no Lot there. No, I take it back. It says, okay, so Lot Taka was there. So you have Avram and Sarah, and maybe a few servants, and Lot, and thus it does. It doesn't say Abraham comes with large flocks of sheep and goat and all the rest of it. I think he did. But guess what happened? If you're in the cattle business, the sheep business, which he was, the others were all like that, as you know. So that's a business like any other business. It has the things you have to take care of or not take care of. If somebody has a huge flocks and it gets hit with one of these magephas that animals are subject to, you get economically wiped out. It happens all the time. I mean, nowadays they have shots that they give the animals and stuff like that. But I'm just saying, there is that risk. And one of the things you need to do is be able to feed and water the animals, as we know. Well, guess what? Avram, at the age of 70, without God telling him, according to Seder Olam, makes a journey from where he lived to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Canaan, and there's a famine. And that means there's nothing to eat and nothing to drink. And what happens to all the sheep and cattle and all the stuff if he brought it? They're dead. How do I know this? Because it says, at least Rashi tells us, that when he returned from Egypt, he paid off all of his debts. You understand? So what does that mean? When he traveled to Egypt to run away from the famine, he stopped in hotels, as we would say today, and he didn't have money to pay. His credit must have been good because they gave him credit. Maybe in an emergency, you know, they give credit anyway. I don't know. But Mistama, Avram, as a legitimate businessman with a Middle East reputation, was known to be, you know, a sound investment, a sound business person with a reputation for being honest. That's just interesting. Because if he repaid all of his debts, it means that he incurred the debts on the way there. That means he stopped at home. Let me put it this way. If me, myself, and I, or you, the listener, wanted to go to a hotel and say, just trust me, I'll pay you when I get back, fat chance that's going to work. Avram obviously came, you know, with a reputation for honest credit. And by the time he comes to Egypt, he doesn't have anything. The animals all died and so forth. There's no mention of him. When it says the second time he comes, it says, oh, he came, you know, with and all this other stuff. You know, whatever he had. Now he doesn't have it. And so he comes to Egypt, and probably precisely because he comes poor, that's why Pharaoh seized Sarah, that's what I think. Because why would he take somebody You know, and why would you think the power would kill a rich person's wife? It's not mustaber. Anything's possible, but not mustaber. Not to me. And so, of course, we all know the story that God would not permit Pharaoh to lay a finger on Sarah, and as a result, he had to get rid of her. And he had, in order to appease Abraham, Avram heiti b'avra, v'yitzon ha'boker b'chamrim v'abodim shvachim v'asen v'zigmon. So Avram hit the jackpot financially as a result of the Sarah story. I think Ramban and others that criticize it, whatever it is, but the bottom line is, say what you want. When he came to Egypt, he was in one financial state, and when he returned from Egypt, he was at a completely different financial state, and that's why he was able, b'chazaroso par hakafosav, he was able to pay off all the bills that he had, which he paid, you know, for as an honest person. And I'm sure this enhanced his reputation. Now, you know, you can play it both ways. You and I say, the Chumash tells us, Vayinag Hashem as a base paro. Paro negoim gedolim, bes beso. Aldvar sarishis avram. So you and I say that the Chumash tells us that paro never laid a finger on her. But I'm sure that's not what the Olam held. You know, as far as they knew, what did they see? This guy Avram shows up. His wife is taken to the palace. A day or two later, she was sent home with a lot of money. That does not look good, okay? But be that, and that's why the king of Sodom later on says so cynically, "Tainli anefesh v'rechush kachloch." And I know who you are, you know. And Avram is very indignant. He says, "I don't want a damn penny from you, you know." Chutat zroch now. But this is what happened to Egypt. So he got rich on the way back. But wait a second. Not necessarily, because on the way back comes the Kedar LaOmer business. So in other words, when Avram comes back, it's very confusing. So him and Lot, you know, Gam Lot Holecha Ram, son of Boaz, that Lot also got a lot of money. And then they split, as we all know. And of course, Lot, very interestingly, chooses to move to Sodom, which it's not clear to me exactly. The Dead Sea was already there. The Dead Sea was not there. It says later on in the war that they fought Emek Hasidim Hu Yam HaMelech, which is usually translated to Emek Hasidim, the Valley of Sidim, where they did the battle, later became the Yam HaMelech. But on the other hand, if you look at the old maps, like in Ari Kaplan, for example, you see the way he understands it, and it makes sense to me, but I don't know, is that the Dead Sea was there, but half the size. Right? Only the upper half of the Dead Sea was there. If you have an Ari Kaplan Chumash, take a look, because he did his homework. If you look on page 67, you see a very nice map of the campaign of the four kings against the five kings, which takes place when Avram returns. So basically, he's saying like this. Eretz Yisrael is nicknamed to be certain. This is a crazy place. I came that there was an economic depression, a famine. And when I came back, it's a war. You understand? It's a war. It was a bloody war, too. And if you understand the geography of it, the enemy invaders came down the other side, the Trans-Jordan side. These are all places across the Jordan River. But then they swing around, and they go to Sodom and Amor and have a battle there and defeat the Sodomites and the Gomorrah and so forth, as we know. And they take Lot, of course. We all know that story. So that means Sodom and Amor were there, but not the Dead Sea. But on the other hand, it sounds like it was on the corner of the Dead Sea. So the bottom line sounds, and let me put it this way. What was it like exactly before the destruction of Sodom and Amorah? If the Dead Sea did not exist in its current form, then it existed in the form of a sweetwater lake, which is just interesting because, I mean, let's put it this way. The Yarden means it goes down, Yored. And you know the topography of Israel like I do. And so, without getting into the details, you start from the Kinneret. The water flows out of the Kinneret downwards, steadily downwards towards what we call today the Dead Sea, which is a mile below sea level, I think everybody knows. That's what's called Yarden. And the water ends up in a certain place. Now, if indeed there was no Yam HaMelech at that time, and it only was created with the destruction of Sodom, then it means that ancient Israel had two Kinnerets. You get what I'm saying? Two sweetwater lakes. I mean, that's kind of interesting. That means that Israel had endless water. one of the big problems we have ever since the Sodom and Gomorrah is all this water from the Yarden goes to waste. It goes to the Dead Sea. And because of that, in modern times, the state of Israel on the one hand and Jordan and the others, they suck out a lot of water before it gets to the Dead Sea. That's why the Jordan is much smaller today than it was. Because you have 10 million people, 12 million people in Israel together with the Shtachim, Palestine, and so forth. And the 12 million people, that's a lot. And in Jordan's side, I know also you probably have another 10 million people. You have 20-some million people, 30 million people need water. Where are you going to get the water from? They're talking from the Yarden, it's one of the major places, which means a whole lot of the water never gets to the Dead Sea, where it goes holich l'ibud. Because of this, there's always been plans for thousands of years. And in modern Israel, they also were talking about if they ever get peace, if, you know, you could cut a canal from the Mediterranean Sea to the Dead Sea, and the water would go from the Mediterranean, it's already salty water from the Mediterranean, into the Dead Sea. And all the water of the Yarden, which is sweet water, would then be used by people nearby Israel and Jordan or something like that. But the time I'm talking about, Sodom and Gomorrah were therefore immediately south of what was the Dead Sea, which maybe it wasn't a Dead Sea. There was some body of water there. That's why it was Kulo Mashke, Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. That's why Lot chose it. The story of Lot choosing it, by the way, in light of current events, is very interesting because nobody knows what tomorrow brings. Avram said, look, you move wherever you want to go, I'll go somewhere else. So Lot said, I'll go to Sodom. Avram said, I'll go to Hebron. What if Lot would say, I'll go to Hebron? I wouldn't move to Sodom. That's just interesting. What would happen if Avram moved to Sodom? It's not so pushy. You'd say like this, Avram would never move to a place like Sodom. Well, Sodom so much worse than our Kazdim? I don't know. There is a famous Chazal that says that one of the big sins of Abraham, not the only one, but one of the big sins of Abraham, was that he gave back the POWs to the king of Sodom after defeating the four kings. Whereas he could have been mashpi on them. When Avram says, aren't there 10 righteous people in the city, 20 righteous people in the city? I mean, it could have been. You understand? It could have been. That colors our understanding of the conversation between God and Abraham. When he says, are there 50 people, 45 people, 40, 30? And Hashem keeps saying no. Avram says, maybe I made a mistake not being by Sodom. But whatever the case is, it also seems to me, by the way, that the four kings, if you go like the Chazal, one of the interpretations of the four kings is they were going after Abraham. They want to kill him. Kedar Lomer and Amraphel, which would be Nimrod and all that, because the campaign is very funny. They go down to Transjordan, and then they swing south of the Dead Sea or south of Sodom and Gomorrah, and they come up on our side, on the Israeli side, and they have a big battle over there, not far from Hebron. And it sounds like they thought Abraham lived there, you know? Maybe it's because the kings of Sodom, whereas Abraham lived close by, nearby. But they could have heard that he moved there because everybody said Avram and Lot moved to different places. Lot had bad luck because he moved to a place that was tremendously prosperous. But a short time later came World War III, you know? The War of the Four Kings and the Five Kings. And so Lot says, what the heck is... You know, it's like, I hate to say it, it's like somebody who a month ago said, I'm moving to this wonderful kibbutz right near the Gaza Strip. It's beautiful. It's well-groomed, which it was. And everything's great there. And this is all true. It is true. But they didn't know that a violent disaster is coming. Because if you think Kedar Lomer, these guys were any different than the Hamas, you're crazy. That's who they were. Mom was taking what we call today taking hostages. That time they took Lot. And these other guys as prisoners, as slaves, as hostages. That's what it was. They didn't know. So let me put it this way. A lot of rabbis this week, especially of a certain type, are going to be making the following sermon. Is Israel going to get back the hostages? Well, Avram got back his hostages, you know, which he did. Which he did, no question about it. You know? And how Avram did is interesting, but let's put it this way. Lot made a bad choice. But he made a choice based on economics. Avram didn't. Although, we'll never know what would have happened. It's just an interesting question I'm raising. What would happen if Lot said, I'm taking Hebron? Avram said, you go to the right, I'll go to the left. You go to the left, I'll go to the right. So maybe Avram would move over to the Sodom place because the ground was fertile. You understand? It was gewaldic for Tzona, Bakar, and all that, which now he had coming out of his ears because Pharaoh had given him a ton of sheep and cattle. So the whole thing is like really, you know, the whole thing is like really confusing or in a great way, in a wonderful way. They're very speculative. Okay? So all this is happening Avram's first time. The average guy would say like this, I visited Israel, it ain't for me. The economy stinks, and it's a war zone. You understand? It's a war zone. Now, what happened, of course, as we know, is that when the four kings invade and they hit Sodom and Amor and they take off Lot, which is right near Hebron, how far is Hebron from the Dead Sea area? So Avram attacks them. It says he had the 318. No, it doesn't. It said, Vayark is Chanichav. Yeah, it does. It has 318 servants. Yelide Beso. I don't know what that means. I mean, did they come with him to Egypt? So he came to Egypt with 318 men, and Pharaoh nevertheless took Sarah off? It doesn't sound right. I mean, maybe it was. Now, if you say 318 is really Eliezer, if you go like that, in Echonami, Avram came with a body servant who was a Rambo, you know, Yoav ben Tzruya, a Gilgal. That's a different story. So that means Avram and Eliezer were two tough hombres, you know. And it's interesting that it says, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but it says, Vayirik is Chanichov, Yelidei Beso. And then, and what does it say over here? Say, notice it was Avram and Onir Eshkol Mamre, and let's say Eliezer, a small band. And it says, Vayichalik Alehim Laila Huva Abadav Vayakim Vayidavim Achov Vashir Mismol Adamesek. Vayashev's called Rechush, Bagama Slope. What does that mean? The enemy armies went down the Transjordan side like gangbusters. They just won every battle. And then when they hit south of the Dead Sea area, south of Sodom and Amorah, they swung up north, you know, by Akuas Amalekim Bekadesh or something like that. So they hit. They went to Kaddish, which is, you know, not too far away from where all these terrorist things happened. South of Beersheba, let's put it that way. And then they swung north and attacked Sodom and Amorah and sacked the city. And then Avram attacks him at night. Vaycholik on Lila Huva Dumbaya King. Very defamed Chova Shibman Small Domestic. I'm always changing my mind, and I'm never 100% sure what exactly this means. It could mean that Avram hit him on guerrilla tactics, Arab style. Vayicholikalim Laila Huva Yadabaya came. They hit him at night, and then they withdrew. Hit him at night, then they withdrew. Because the army of the four kings is going up the Jordan Valley, which is low, and Abraham is in the mountain areas, and therefore he has the advantage of making a surprise attack at night. And he kept this up, hitting them again and again, sort of like the Russians did to Napoleon when he was withdrawing from Russia. And he keeps this up all the way the Jordan Valley, past the Jordan Valley, around the Kinneret, you know, the area of Tzfas, as we would say today, up to past the Don, you know, the Banyas, and he keeps fighting them, it says. The Torah tells us, it's not me. And it goes all the way to near Damascus, right? Actually, Chova, if you go by the map, is north, west of Damascus. So that means he had a whole series of guerrilla raids, which turned out to be very effective. Look, I'm going to tell you something. They kicked the Americans out of Afghanistan with that stuff. You understand? So Avram knew what he's doing. On the other hand, it also can be read, because it said Vayakim. It doesn't say Vayakum. So it says, Vayichalek alam hova abadov. He divided night, he and his servants, he and his men, Vayakim, and he hit them. Right? And he chased them. So it sounds like they had, you could also read it like he gave him a blow. It doesn't say they did, which is interesting to me. Let's put it this way. He has a whole little army over there. But when Avram charges at the enemy, he was like a fearful Rambo type. And he started killing everybody right and left, and they ran away. No, he inflicted a defeat on them. And then he chased the retreating army relentlessly all the way to Damascus. from the Dead Sea north to Damascus, which means that he was like a great general of the old school, which says, once you get the enemy down, do not let up on the pursuit. Many, many battles have been lost because you won today, but you let them get away. Avram has no intention of letting them get away. And he, mamish, you know, chased after them. So you could read it that way also. All I know is, this is all supposed to take place when he's on his voluntary trip to Israel. And so, ordinarily, you'd say like this. I was in Israel. I was a victim of a terrorist attack. I don't know, something like that. I lost my money there. I gained my money in a funny way. I'm moving back to Ur Kasdim, to Haran. That's where things were normal. And he did do that. But then 5 years later, Hashem says, Lech Lecho. Okay, Lech Lecho. So maybe Hashem says Lech Lecho because Lech Lech, you might be hesitant to do it because last time you went to Israel, it wasn't so gavaldic. But again, I can't be right about that if you assume that Melchizedek Melchishalim, who greets him after the victory of the four kings over the five kings, I mean, after he defeats the four kings, it says, Hotzi Lechem V'yoyim, who coined the Elohim. So I remember I read many, many years ago that Ari Kaplan says he handed down the traditions that come from the time of Adam. It sounds like Nevuah. And I think I saw somewhere in the Kabbalah will say, you tell him Kabbalah. That is to say like this. Now he learns from him how to do Nevuah. You know, let's put it that way. Using the methods taught him by Shame, Avram sought to attain true prophecy. Okay? And he's quoting here the Sefer Yetzirah. The Pirush arrived in the Sefer Yetzirah, and the Pirush of the, the Rokeach on Sefer Yetzirah. So the Kabbalistic, the mystical, Mefarshim, they read the Chumash in their way, obviously, and they're going to say like this, what, you tell me a story, brought him bread and wine? Are you crazy? Who cares about what he brought him bread and wine? I mean, Al-Pipashim Shad, I said, I guess, he brought him bread and wine as a victor, right? But why would the Torah tell you that? A mystic would say, Elamai, lechem doesn't mean lechem, and yayin doesn't mean yayin. Lechem would be Torah Shabiksav, yayin would be Torah Shabapeh, lechem would be nigla, yayin would be nister. That fits in very well because yayin is sowed, you know, yud, nun, and so forth and so on. In other words, this is a turning point in the career of Avram Avinu, a turning point. And based on this comes Lech Lecha, meaning after Melchizedek shows him the ropes. And Melchizedek, of course, if his shame was a great, 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 great grandfather. If you ever want to figure this stuff out, get the, get the art scroll, the stone Chumash. I'm serious. And go to page 53 at the end of Parshas Noach. And they give you the nice chart. I mean, you can do it yourself, of course. But I'm giving it the easy way. Chronology timeline. And you see from Adam to Yaakov. And you'll see. Hirshem, then Arpachshad, then Shelah, then Averit, and Peleg, Ruth, Rug, Nochar, Terech, and Avram. So Avram is like nine generations after Shem. And six or seven after Aver, who's the grandson of Shem. So when we talk about the yeshiva, Shem and Aver, it was a yeshiva run by a grandfather and grandson. I've heard of those things in the yeshiva world even today, right? You can have yeshiva where it's run by the grandfather and the grandson. What about the guys in the middle? Arpachshad and Shelah? They weren't Rosh Hashiva material. I don't know. I don't know. We know the yeshiva was called Yeshiva Shem Be'er. It wasn't called Yeshiva Shem Arpachshad. It wasn't called Yeshiva, Shelah. If Avram is called Avram Ho'ivri, Mamshat, there are many interpretations of that term. Mamshat is, he took her after his great-great-great-great-grandfather, Aver. Avram Ivri. So you say, you know, he's like that famous Rosh Hashiva of Shem Be'er long ago. It's the allusions and the suggestions here are very, not 100% clear, but very suggestive. Let's put it that way. Okay, so if Avram goes back to Ur Kasdim, the only problem with this is you're not supposed to get Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz, but maybe in those days it was different. So he goes back to Ur Kasdim, and I guess he's working on the methodologies that he was taught to attain Nevuah, meditation, you know, things like that. That's the beginning of it, of course. You know, Bitul Yesh, whatever it takes. Mikvah, whatever. And after 5 years, Hashem Taka talks to him. And Hashem says, Lech Lech, Lech Lecha. And moved to Eretz Yisrael. This time he, Anevashir Asa Bacharin. Oh, now it's interesting. Avram made this first trip to Israel. He had all of his adventures and his misadventures. It's like a roller coaster. And then what happened? He had this encounter after the battle with Melchizedek. He does not have an uplifting encounter with Lot. But I'm sure Lot was plenty glad to be rescued, but I mean, it doesn't say anything spiritual came out of that. But he, with Melchizedek, with shame, he had an encounter. And he's a changed person. And now when he goes back to Haran, HaNefesh HaShasav HaChoran, during these 5 years, that's when he makes the Gerim, if I can use that term. That's where he starts to become a missionary. That's interesting. So his time in Eretz Yisrael didn't work out 100%, but in the larger picture, it did work out. He became Avram Avinu, Ad Kedei Kach, that God tells him, Lech L'Matzim El Arz Asherecha. Now, ironically, Avram, during these 5 years that he returns from his trip to Israel, is making a lot of converts, but he himself has no children. Hashem says, don't worry, you'll get to Eretz Yisrael. You know, it'll work out. You'll have children. Doesn't happen overnight. Bris Ben Absarim. When exactly Bris Ben Absarim happens is, again, not clear. I'm happening to hold in front of me at this moment a Seder Olam with Nekudas I picked up years ago in Israel, naturally. It's a very firm edition because all it has at the bottom is a beer, a Gra. And the Gra is bothered by all this stuff. And he has his own take on it. He said, Docha Gadol, Ki Lefizet Tzarech Lomashah, Beis Pam Beretz Yisrael, Begam Tzarech Lomashah, Pesukim Nemar Shalok Kesidron. The only one is bothered by the fact that it doesn't fit, sound like a shot. Everything I just told you in Seder Olam, which is how most understand it, means you have to be Mesaris HaMikra. You have to say, second part of the first Aliyah comes first, the other one comes second, and Avram was there two times. Although, the idea that Avram was there two times is extremely suggestive, because he only makes these converts after he had this encounter with Shem Weber. Otherwise, you say he's in Eretz Yisrael, you know, from the beginning only one time, and these people he made converts were part of who Avram was already before he ever went to Israel the first time. That's a completely different story. It's a nice story of its own. But who is the real Abraham? Was he the guy who from day one in his life, once he discovered monotheism, went around and couldn't help himself but go and try to spread it everywhere? Or was he the person who actually kept himself more, but when he had this encounter in Eretz Yisrael after the wars and after Egypt and after he met Melchizedek and all the rest of it, he came back like supercharged. And maybe part of the avoda of trying to become a real Navi is, you know, to go and be makar of people to Ribono Shel Olam. And then you have the problem, of course, where does the Bris Ben Absarim fit into all that? So, as I said before, once you start getting a little bit below the surface of Parsha Lech Lecha, you see, like, the tunnels in Gaza. You know, I mean, the different traditions go in a lot of different directions. And I invite you to do some of this work, if you have the time. And don't follow only one Mahal, because there's different ones. I bet you the Art Scroll thing on Bracious, that fat book probably has a lot of the stuff in there. And the question is, will the real Abraham stand up? We can't know. We only know the different Mesoras that have been handed down to us. But each one of them is highly suggestive, and each one of them is particularly fascinating in light of the fact that we are now undergoing some kind of Kedar Lomer situation. Not exactly, but Israel's under attack, as we know. And we really need Vayarkes Chanicha Vayecholikom Laila. It could very well be that Israel will make a night attack on them. I don't know, you know, because they have trained to fight at night. And then it says he took the war as far as Damascus. I mean, that's very suggestive for the current event situation. I'm not even going to, you know, venture to guess which way the current conflict is going to go. Obviously, we all daven. But the fact that this is all happening in Parsha Lech Lecha, among other Parshas, when you have the first Jewish war in history, Jav Mavinu, and he's fighting to get back hostages because that's the only reason he did it. Avram stood by himself in Chevron with Honor Eshkol Mamre. Suppose Kedar Olam would run up and not seize Lot, which, by the way, in hindsight, would have been the smartest thing. Suppose Kedar Olam would have said, I'm going to take everybody in Sodom, but I'm going to leave the house of Lot alone. I don't want to mess with Abraham. Avram would not have intervened over there. He didn't give a doggone about Sodom, Amor, Admat, Swayim. Adrabo, they're a bunch of bums. Because he took Lot, that transformed into a different thing. That's a family feud. You see? Then you got to come and protect your own. So Kedar Olam made a big mistake by picking on Lot. I hope, in conclusion, that the Hamas made a big mistake on picking on the hostages that they did, because they're probably used to the idea you get away with it. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I'm not an armchair general, but I hope. Same way Avram was able to rescue his hostages, plus many others, Lot will too. I'm sorry, Israel will too. And notice, who was the beneficiary of Abraham's actions? All the Goyim too. Sodom, Amorah, all the others. They all said, Nasi Elohim, Atobah Zochena, you saved us. So they benefit from Avram's war. The same way civilized countries know that they're benefiting from Israel's war. But I don't want to get too political on this. And I've gone way too long for a Parsha podcast, but it doesn't matter. Again, this is being sponsored by the Shulchman family, Eitan Ariella, and the larger Shulchman family in Baltimore and in Milwaukee and in other places. And I hope, let's put it this way, I hope that they always say like this, a Melech Yosher. I hope Jake will be a Melech Yosher for Israel and all the people that are in trouble now, because we need a bunch of those full time. Anyway, with that, I wish you a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.